10 Ways to Become a More Proficient Pilot in 2008. I'm Paul Flagg, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller, CFII based in the Buffalo, New York area. Bob's newsletter is called Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. And Bob, we missed a couple of our Monday chats over the holidays because of the way the calendar fell, and I didn't want to get away without talking about Bob's top 10 list for 2008. You said that this is the time of year where we resolve to change our lives, and I think that you have a very interesting list of resolutions for the new year.
Yeah, everybody at the first of the year tends to make resolutions, and this is a good time to kind of look at last year and look at this year. And in terms of our aviation or our piloting activities, it's a good time to just think about what we might do in the next 12 months very specifically to improve our proficiency as pilots. And I've oftentimes said that a goal is a wish that is written down.
Right.
So that we'll take our wishes and we'll write them down. And I just penned out, purely at random, 10 things that I've tried to do in the past at the beginning of each new year. And I've encouraged other people to do these same kinds of things, not in any particular order, but make a list, try to accomplish it, check them off in the next 12 months.
All right, let's run down the list one by one, and I'll just get your comments on each one. Number one on the list is new pilot rating or endorsement. Get an instrument, commercial, ATP, tailwheel, or seaplane endorsement.
Yes, I think adding a new endorsement or a new rating to our certificate is an excellent way to systematically improve our skills. Not that we want to exercise the privileges of that rating. A lot of us in our late 50s went on for our ATP, for example. Not that we had any thoughts of being in command of an airliner, but it was the next rating out there, or the next exercise, or the next mountain, if you will, that we could pursue. And it doesn't have to be a full-blown rating. It could be, for example, a tailwheel endorsement, any other kind of endorsement that just adds to our certificate, or it could be a complete rating.
All right. Now, how will this make us more proficient pilots?
Well, it puts us into the learning mode once again. And in that learning mode, we're working with a CFI who is challenging us to try new things, different things. If it's a multi-engine rating, then we're learning new aspects of aerodynamics with dual thrust centers and things like that. So just the process of learning will make us more proficient.
Okay, well, I can buy that immediately. I know that every time I've tried to branch out, I've learned something new. Aircraft checkout. There's been a revolution in new cockpit technology. Let's see what's out there by getting checked out in a late model glass cockpit aircraft. How will this benefit someone, Bob, who's a weekend flyer who's going to probably be stuck with steam gauges for a while?
Well, a new type of aircraft checkout might be just a larger airplane. It might be a Cessna 152 pilot that checks out a 172 or a 172 up to a 182 or a 210. Excuse me. It could also be new avionics, as you pointed out. It might be a ride around the pattern in a glass cockpit airplane, or even in a technologically advanced airplane with moving maps. The new aircraft checkout might inspire us to enhance our existing airplane, or perhaps think about selling our airplane and moving up, particularly after we see the benefits of that new airplane and the various features that it has.
All right, now, number three on your list is a little bit related to number one, and that's skill enhancement. Pick your greatest piloting weakness and master it. Crosswind landings, operating in low IFR, partial panel work, stalls and unusual attitudes, and short field landings go with the territory. Become comfortable with each of them. Now, Bob, based on what we've talked about in the past, there are some instructors who need to have this one on their list.
Well, I think so, and I certainly counted myself among those instructors in my early days of training. I, for one, really abhorred crosswind landings. I had an instructor that just insisted on picking the best runway all the time and wind-wise, and I never had an opportunity to develop crosswind landing skills until I recognized that as a weakness. And once recognized, a problem recognized is half solved. So I found an instructor who then said, well, yeah, I mean, I can help you with crosswind landings. When I take individuals out on biennial flight reviews or instrument proficiency checks, we'll go through some exercise, and invariably somebody will say under their breath, oh, I hate doing this, or I hate doing that. I was out with a lady today that absolutely hated doing stalls. And I said, well, likely the reason we hate doing stalls is because we fear them. We do not understand how they work and how they're recovered. So that if we can be truly objective with ourselves, identify those things in the flying regime that we do not like doing. For instrument pilots, it might be shooting approaches to instrument minimums. Again, we mentioned crosswinds. It may be stalls. It may be any number of kinds of things that if we don't like them, chances are we're not good at them. So let's identify them. Let's use this year to attack them and become proficient and remove those fears from our flying.
Okay. I can buy that one, too. Visit an ATC facility is on your list at number four. ATC is the second or third member of the cockpit crew, you write. Know what they can do for us. Call your nearest tower, TRACON, or center and schedule a visit. They welcome pilot guests. Is this still true after 9/11?
Oh, no question about it. ATC enjoys having us up. It's a break in their day. But if I were to elevate all of the 10, I would probably elevate this to number one or number two. Once we have an understanding of the challenges that the controller faces, and the view of the airspace systems as seen from the radar room or the tower, it gives us a much better understanding of the whole world that we're operating in, just understanding what that other person sees. Operation Rain Check, it's sometimes called, but call the local tower, call the local radar facility, or if you are in a center area, for example, Islip is the home of New York Center. You can call ahead, arrange a visit, and they will be happy to take you through an hour, sometimes 2 hours. We have a program here, and I think it's pretty much extant throughout the United States. It's called a plug-in program, where when arranged in advance, bring your favorite headset, check in at the tower or the radar facility, and they will allow you to plug in and actually listen to the exchanges from the controller's point of view. I asked the controller when I did this one time if I could issue a vector. And the controller quipped, yes, you can do it once before we put you out in handcuffs. So don't expect to talk on the radio, but you can certainly listen and see, and then see the dilemma and the challenges that they have from their perspective.
All right. Now, when you do this, do you take along a standard aviation headset or a stereo headset?
Either one. Sometimes they have an extra headset, but I just brought along my own headset and just plugged it in and it was, I guess, the biggest eye-opening experience for me was a visit to the New York Center in Islip, Long Island. I had no idea of the way the airspace was really fractionalized into sectors, mm-hmm. altitude sectors and region sectors, and how these individuals work hand in glove with each other to make it work. And I also had a sense that the controllers, they were not policemen sitting behind radar guns in the bushes waiting to nab somebody. My impression of controllers changed immediately after a visit to the facility. These are normal people.
Mm-hmm.
They wear sweaters and they wear blue jeans and they have a life and they're human. And once we have an appreciation for that, it helps to remove any kind of radio fear that we have or mic fright that we might have when knowing what the person on the other end of that mic really is like.
Or for some people, it may even get over that phobia about declaring an emergency, which we know has cost some people their lives.
Oh, yes. I firmly believe that ATC is the second or third member of the cockpit crew. I'm talking with these guys all the time. In fact, we have here in Buffalo kind of a social gathering where a group of pilots and local controllers meet once every month over dinner, and we just exchange ideas and exchange thoughts and problems and challenges, and they are as much interested in our world as we are in their world. So it's really an eye-opening experience to develop this kind of informal relationship with your local controllers.
We're talking with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves about his 10 top things to do to become a more proficient pilot in 2008. We'll talk about more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888 888- 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack talking with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. We're talking about Bob's top 10 list of things to do to become a more proficient pilot in 2008. Bob, number five on your list is take a trip, stick a pin in the map, and go there. Don't let fuel prices discourage you. We only go around once. What will this do for our proficiency?
Well, a lot, believe me. When we leave our own home area and fly into other areas of airspace, in particular over other unfamiliar terrain, such as open water, I recall my first trip to the Bahamas was a wonderfully rewarding experience for me as a pilot, from fuel planning perspective to emergency procedures to arranging to have rafts and things like that in the unlikely event that we had an engine failure. The New York City trip, for example, or along the West Coast in the L.A. Basin, operating in congested airspace is also not only an eye-opening experience, it's a confidence-building experience. Several trips across the Rockies also adds a whole new dimension to flying from a weather perspective, mountain waves and different characteristics associated with mountains. I have not yet had the privilege of flying myself into Alaska, although I've worked up there, but that's next, probably this year for me to do, is to go up there and visit my colleague Don Lee, who operates a wonderful float plane and river bottom and glacier school for pilots, and that goes back to getting additional endorsements. Flying out to Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket out over the Boston, Massachusetts area and seeing how a coastal fog can affect weather, affect flight operations. These are all confidence-building experiences, but adds back the payback, if you will, for the expense we have in learning to fly, the joy of going to someplace new and different.
I'm going to look back at my flight training and say that what you're proposing here, Bob, is somewhat analogous to why flight instructors, when we're studying for our tickets in the first place, make us plan a cross-country flight, only on a larger scale.
Yes, this is. In fact, it's the ultimate manifestation of what the airplane is for, to travel far and to travel fast. And to not take advantage of that ability is a waste of a resource. And we can do this in our 152 or our J3 Cub. I know an individual who went from New York to L.A. in a J3 Cub, never got above 1,500 feet the entire trip, AGL. Had a wonderful experience doing it. It's just, once you do it, this is something that we all plan to do over and over and over again.
All right, number six on your list is to attend one of the major aviation events like Lakeland or Oshkosh. I will tell you that I have seen seminars at these events that are nothing like I would have found anywhere else.
The learning that takes place is unparalleled. When you go into these facilities, into these fly-ins, my greatest regret after my first trip to Oshkosh was that it took me some 20 years to get there for one reason or another. I just never took advantage of it. And then having gone there for the first time, I said, what a terrible waste that I missed this during the first 20 years of my flying career.
Well, and it's a major social event on your calendar, Bob.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, we take 30 or 40 or 50 of us, sometimes 60 of us from Buffalo, and we all meet at Oshkosh. You and I had the pleasure of meeting together at our compound, if you will.
I saw Camp Tonawanda, or whatever you call it.
But, you know, sun and fun for folks on the East Coast is a great experience. There is no experience quite like Oshkosh, and I think anybody will attest to that. It is the mecca of general aviation, and once you go there, I mean, we share facilities with a whole group of pilots from Cape Town, South Africa. Now, I mean, that's a long way away from Oshkosh, but they come up there every year, year after year, and they claim that there is absolutely nothing like it.
Well, nothing on the planet like it, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
Number seven on your list, acquire or upgrade your airplane. This is interesting. How will this make us a more proficient pilot?
Well, once we have our own airplane, of course, we tend to fly more. So there are a lot of us. I flew for 12 years as a renter myself.
Right.
Until I decided to bite the bullet and buy an airplane, and my annual flying hours just quadrupled. So that alone makes me a better pilot.
Mm-hmm.
For those of us who have an airplane, budget $2,000-$4,000. You know, I know fuel prices are up there, but there are things that we can do to our airplane. Most of us with the Garmin 430, we're investing in a WAS upgrade that gives us precision approaches using GPS navigation. It might be simply adding a tape deck or a cassette player or anything to the airplane to make it more comfortable. This is our baby, and let's invest in it. And I think it does make us better pilots.
Number 8 on your list, Bob, how will mentoring a young person make me a more proficient pilot?
It will only give us a good feeling about flying.
Okay.
That's about all I can say about that. I think we all have a responsibility to replicate ourselves in this business. And if we all did it, then our future would be sound. But there is nothing, in my opinion, more rewarding other than perhaps being an angel flight pilot and taking sick people to medical treatment facilities. The only other thing that really gives you a warm feeling is to see a smile on the face of a youngster who for the first time is experiencing flight.
All right. Number 9, become more weather savvy. Weather is our number one risk factor. Become a junior meteorologist by reading everything you can on weather. They told me this in flight school, Bob.
Well, that's it. The number one risk factor in all of aviation is weather. And engineers specialize, attorneys specialize, physicians specialize, and I think we aviators need to specialize in something. It may be aerobatics. It may be flying cargo. I think personally, if we were to specialize, if we could specialize in meteorology and learn, I mean genuinely learn the effects of the atmosphere and how to project and predict what impact this will have on our flying can only help us. That's all I can say about that.
All right. And finally, number 10, join AOPA and EAA. I think it's pretty intuitive what joining AOPA would do for you, but what about the many who do not go anywhere near experimental aircraft? Why would they want to join EAA?
Well, EAA, just the price break that you obtain when you go to Oshkosh, but EAA is really the focus for the recreational pilot, the protector, if you will, of the home-built airplane, the experimental airplane. I mean, we're talking $40 here. We're talking, 8 gallons of gasoline, 9 gallons of gasoline in the cost to join these organizations. Both AOPA and EAA really do have our best interests at heart in protecting our rights, our freedoms to fly. And if we had 600,000 pilots all paying dues to both of those organizations, we would be literally twice as strong as we are now.
Well, Bob, I honestly cannot nitpick any of those items on your top 10 list, and I think they're all very good suggestions for becoming a more proficient pilot in 2008. We appreciate, of course, here at AeroNews, your help in moving us all in that direction.
Well, as always, it's my pleasure, Paul. Happy to do it.
You can read Bob's writings at overtheairwaves.com. You'll also see a place where you can sign up to receive an email notification when each monthly issue comes out. You'll also find a link to Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated, and we'll tell you more about what that is on Monday. You've been listening to a special feature from AeroNews. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.